Yes, it's that time of the week again, and we're going on an adventure with Sally Lucas. Good afternoon, Sal.
Hi, Amanda. How's it going?
It's great, thank you.
That is good.
You're feeling good. It's Friday. You
ready? Lovely sunny day, yes. And ready for a sunny weekend, we hope.
What's in store today for
us? Well, I thought today, because there's been so much, I guess, hype in the papers recently and on news about over-tourism, and you know how so many cities in the world are sick of it because they feel their cities are being ruined and they're not what they once were. So I'm thinking, well, go somewhere different. Yeah. Go somewhere where it's not going to be so many people. So we'll talk about Eastern Europe because I think everyone just thinks about Western Europe. But they've got as much history, if not more, in Eastern Europe to discover as well, and some beautiful areas. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the European visa scheme. It's been coming for the last 2 years. Is it really coming? It's supposed to be in this year, now next year. And then we'll talk about some interesting facts on the Eiffel Tower you might not know about.
Oh, excellent. This is Talking Travel with Sally Lucas. Sally, we want to go to Eastern Europe.
Well, I thought, as I said earlier, that we should talk a little bit about this today because there's some fascinating parts of Eastern Europe. And we're not, you know, obviously talking about Russia and that part of Eastern Europe. We're talking about the Near Eastern Europe to Western Europe. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about places like Bulgaria, Romania, Transylvania, even Poland, Hungary, you know, all these areas have got so much history. And it always amazed me when I went to Bucharest. It was an amazing city. And I'm going back to the 80s when I did this. It was even, I think, just before the wall fell in Berlin, and I travelled all through Eastern Europe. And it was just fascinating. Like, we even went to what is supposedly Drax Castle in Transylvania and went to this beautiful town in Bulgaria. I always loved the name, Plovdiv.
Plovdiv.
And it was only recently written up by Tony Wheeler, who was the original writer of the Lonely Planet books. He's since sold it, saying what a fascinating town. I thought, wow, I've never heard of anyone going to Plovdiv before. So it is, and there's some lovely cruises now. We all know about the cruises. You know, everyone knows the Amsterdam to Budapest cruise, but there are lots of lovely cruises that go all through these Eastern European countries where the history is absolutely amazing. And some of them weren't destroyed during the war, of course, you've got to remember. Mm. So, you know, they're intact and they've still got some beautiful history. Like, there's even a, they reckon one of the original European villages was unearthed only, well, not long, when I say not long, the 1960s, on the banks of the Danube. And it dates back to way, way back, where they found, you know, statues and remains of bones and all this thing, because they built cities on top of cities. Mm. Like, even Paris is built on top of another city, on the where the Ile de la Cité is in the Seine. So, you know, you've got to remember, you're just stepping back in history. And one of them, like Bucharest, is designed like, they call it the Paris of the East. It's even got the equivalent of the Champs-Élysées and an Arc de Triomphe.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's, you know, people don't realise what there is there, I think, because everyone thinks, yeah, I must go to Italy, I must go to France, I must go to Spain and Portugal. But, you know, if you do want to go somewhere where it's a little bit less travelled and you're going to see something a little bit different, you're going to experience a lot of beautiful architecture, very different, some of the Eastern European architecture, different food, you know, totally different to some of the Western European food.
Is it cheaper?
Yeah. And even if you want to go further afield into, like, countries like Georgia, where Tbilisi is your capital, like, it's so inexpensive there because people still haven't heard about it. But you've got, like, you have in all the stands, Turkmenistan, you know, Kyrgyzstan, all those, they had a lot of use of mosaic tiles. So a lot of these buildings have got these beautiful tile domes and minarets. And, you know, so you're seeing something that's absolutely spectacular that you're not going to see in Western Europe. So, you know, it's certainly to be considered, I think, if you haven't done it. There's lots of lovely river cruises doing these Eastern European rivers now, if you want to do it that way, like Viking and some of the other companies. And that's a nice way to do it because you're just looking at the scenery as you float along the river. You're pulling up right in the township or the village and you're walking ashore, and whether you're going to ride a bike or do a tour or do your own thing, it doesn't matter. It's a nice, easy way of doing it. Unpack once, you know, you've got your lovely meals on board, but you can still go ashore and experience some nice coffee and snacks or wine tastings or whatever to immerse yourself in the culture and the food of these countries. Or, of course, there are companies that do coach tours as well. If you're not a river cruise person and you prefer the coach touring side of it, there's small group touring companies that do wonderful coach tours into Eastern Europe. So I just think at a time when the world is, I guess, complaining about the bulging tourism numbers in some areas, maybe just look at going somewhere different. And then also you're helping their economy. You know, you're doing something good for them. The other countries are swamped. So it's worth
thinking about for sure, especially, you know, because, as you said, everyone sort of goes to, you know, France or Italy. Mm. But, yeah, you don't think about those other places in Eastern Europe.
No.
You know? And I guess, too, you kind of think, oh, the language barrier, it's going to be hard.
But, yes. You know. But I guess it's the same. I mean, even if you go to France, like most people still speak their own language. Of course, the younger generation of most countries these days does learn English. It's one of the most spoken languages in the world now. But, of course, any of the elderly people are still going to be speaking their own language. Luckily, even when they come here, you look at a lot of our lovely people that have come out and immigrated here, particularly the women. They often didn't go to work. They just stayed at home and the husband found a job, whether in Newcastle it was the BHP, was a big employer. And we had the most beautiful Greek neighbours that have been out here 40-odd years. Mm. But they still have that very strong accent and not a good use of the English language, because these days, you know, they've got TAFE courses, they've got things to help people when they come here, you know, with the language. So we can't expect to go there. That is their language. And that's why I always say the old days you had your phrase book, but you can get an app now.
Yeah, the apps are great, aren't they?
For your language to help you out. So I think don't use that as a barrier, the language, that you'll be able to make do with that. But you're just going to go and see something very special. I think you'll come away feeling very surprised and really very pleased that you made that choice.
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea.
Yeah.
Thanks, Sal.
No worries. So next we're going to talk about, is Europeans' visa scheme really coming? Well, we'll soon find out.
This is Newcastle on the Hunters 2 and URFM, and this is Talking Travel with Sally Lucas. And Sally, you want to talk about European visas.
I do, and it is coming at some date in 2025, supposedly. Australian passport holders will need what they call an ETIAS, E-T-I-A-S, travel authorisation to enter the EU. But I'd say don't hold your breath in some respects, because this was approved back in 2016 and it still hasn't happened.
It's taking their time.
Yes, it's been postponed, it's been delayed, it's been shoved on the back burner year after year. In 2022, the EU authorities were charged with implementing the scheme, and they changed the start date to 2023, then 2024 and now 2025. So what's going to happen is that some nationalities will require a visa to enter what they call the Schengen zone, but Australia is one of about 60 countries which are deemed a low-level threat for safety, okay? And hopefully that stays the case with us, as it always has around the world, and because of our safety and security of our region and its people. So we qualify what they call for this ETIAS. So I guess we've still got to wait what's going to happen, and it will have an official website, apparently, ETIAS.com, but the app, apparently, surprise, surprise, is still under construction.
2025, maybe?
Maybe. So you've got to complete an application form. You've got to pay a fee of €7, which is probably around about $11.50 Australian. Submit your application, wait an email confirming the outcome. And if you're under 18 and over 70, there is no application fee. Then once granted, you have the right to enter and remain in the countries of the Schengen zone, plus most of Europe's non-Schengen as well, such as little micro-states such as Andorra and Monaco, for a stay of up to 90 days in any 180-day period. So it's still pretty lengthy.
Yeah.
They're just trying to stop people from coming and staying indefinitely or trying to get work and all this sort of thing, that you're there as a genuine, you know, holiday maker or
that
tourist.
Makes sense.
Yeah, and apart from a few Balkan countries such as Serbia, etc., the ETIAS covers most of continental Europe plus all the Nordic countries as well. But look, I'll keep you posted.
Don't hold your breath.
Now, I thought, of course, we've been having the Olympics and, of course, our wonderful Paralympians. How marvellously
they've
are they
been
doing?
Fantastic.
It's been even better. Well, I shouldn't say that. I didn't see all of the Olympics because I was in South America, so I was away for that whole duration. So I was only getting snippets when we could pick up a bit of TV. But certainly I think the Paralympians and the braveness of some of these athletes and what they can achieve with their disabilities, I'm just overwhelmed.
They're doing an amazing job.
Absolutely amazing. So hats off them for a start. But I thought, well, let's talk about the Eiffel Tower because they've all been in Paris. So clearly the main event, of course, people often want to do is to go to the very top, though that's not necessarily essential. You've got three observation decks within the tower. One's at 57 metres, one at 115, then the highest is 276.
So have you been up there?
You're up quite. I didn't get to the top, no. I just decided it was all right to go to the middle level.
I've been up there too. I don't think I've been that high either.
No. So you can get to the first and second floors by lift or stairs. And of course, the one that includes the top level is only accessible by lift from the second floor. So just remember that. But of course, you're going to get exceptional views, of course, over the whole of Paris. And don't forget what's up there as well, which is France, of course, a champagne bar or champagne. What nicer way to say cheers to the Santé to Paris.
There. You don't want to have too many champagnes.
Well, I'm sure they'd limit you on that. Now, this is an unexpected attraction, which I didn't even know about till I read this. At the top of the Eiffel Tower, there's an apartment. No one lives there, save for a few wax figures, but there's a recreation there of what was the office for Gustave Eiffel, who was the architect, of course, behind the structure you find yourself on top of. So even though it's known to some as an apartment, there's no bedroom and no evidence that he ever slept there, but it was more a place to meet visitors, and he used to sit there in contemplation.
Oh.
So there you go, I guess admiring his
work,
or his view, yes, his view. But you can sort of peek through the windows and see a waxwork of him and his daughter Claire meeting the American inventor Thomas Edison. So there you go. That's something I didn't know was there. Of course, you've got a few restaurants there as well. The most famous one is the Jules Verne restaurant, which is a fine dining establishment. Bring your wallet with you, which is on the second floor of the tower, and it has two Michelin stars, so it's an up there. I mean, your menu start, I think, from about 290 euros.
Okay.
About 500 bucks.
Yeah, bring a lot of dollars.
Bring your credit card, as I said. Then there's that one called Madame Brasserie on the first floor, which is a little bit more low-key than the Jules Verne, and it's only 62 euros a person. And then you've got buffet restaurants as well on the first and second floor, and a macaron bar as well.
Any fish and chips?
No chish and chips. the other interesting story is that the French author Guy de Maupassant, he was a vocal critic of the Eiffel Tower, and he would eat his lunch each day at the tower because it was the only place from Paris he couldn't see it. How classic is that? How classic is that? So that's everyone who wants to climb and enjoy the views of Paris from the top, of course you can do that. But you can also see it from the ugliest building that should never have been built. They learnt Paris and have never done one since, which is the building in Montparnasse, which is a 59-storey tower, which is it's black and it's a real blot on the landscape. But if you go to the top there, you probably get one of the best views of the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah, well.
And you get a good one from near the Sacré-Cœur, and you also do from that lovely department store, Galerie Lafayette, up on the top floor there. So there might be a few things you didn't know about the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah, nice. All right, well, We've learned a few things today, haven't we?
So if you've even been to the Eiffel Tower, you might like to go and do something different this time.
That's right. And we've got some hot deals, Sal.
Okay. Again, I've got to have one for Mark every week just to keep him happy.
Digruten.
Now, I'm not going to even try to I'm not even going to try and say this in Norwegian, but the translation is to be in the middle of butter melting in the porridge. That's the literal translation, and what that means is to be in a great place.
Right.
I love it. To be in the middle of butter melting in the porridge. So they're coming up with one of these quotes every week. I love them. They've got such a good sense of humour. Anyway, they're saying there's no greater way to experience the magical Northern Lights, of course, than on one of their signature voyages. So you're being in a great place. So you might not be in the middle of butter melting in a porridge, but you'll be in the middle of the greatest light show on earth, and your heart will melt at the sight.
Oh.
So there you go. So they've got a limited time of savings of up to $1,400 per cabin on what they call their signature voyages. Now, they're similar to their normal voyages, except that it's elevated to give you more front row experiences of the Norway's highlights, with premium all-inclusive food and drink and enhanced onboard guiding. So there's those available. And don't forget their Northern Lights promise that if you're doing a six-day southbound or seven-day northbound original coastal express voyage, that's their basic voyage, you get another one free of charge if the Northern Lights do not appear on your cruise.
Ooh, well, that's good.
So that's something to remember. Also, they've got some last-minute vacancies for over the Christmas period, but even starting from October through till about January. So if you're still thinking of doing Antarctica's been on your bucket list, and there's another one with Antarctica and the Falklands, you don't often get vacancies this close to departures. So they maybe have had a few cancellations, because normally to get to Antarctica you've got to book a year or two ahead. So if you're thinking, wow, yeah, this is what I'd really love to do, they've got some, and they've reduced them by quite a few $1,000s. Like there's a 12-day one Antarctica that's been reduced by three, and the 16-day to Falklands is also reduced by $3,000. Coral Expeditions is a lovely Australian company we've talked about before. And I just thought today I'm not so much talking about any particular special deals, but just to let you know the areas that they fly to. And it's always good to, I think, support a local company. So their cruise areas cover really quite a wide range. The Kimberley, the Great Barrier Reef, Cape York, Arnhem Land and the Torres Strait, the south coast of Australia, the west coast, Tasmania, New Zealand, New Guinea and Micronesia, Japan and the Philippines, the Komodo, Sulawesi and Borneo, and the Raja Ampat and the Spice Islands in Indonesia, as well as they do festive season theme cruises, circumnavigation series where they go around Australia, and they do some culinary coastlines where they do foodie trips on the different coastlines when they have some special theme voyages, and small islands of the world. Now, with them too, they have everything included, all excursions with their expedition team, use of all the Zodiacs, daily lectures and briefings with guest lectures. So it's all about the journey again. It's small ship cruising, all meals, selected wines, beers, house spirits, juices, 24-hour barista-style coffee and a tea station as well, all entrance fees to national parks, ports, traditional owner fees, charges, tips, gratuities, on and on. So it's you're paying up front, but that's it.
That's good. That's what you want. You don't want to have to.
You haven't
worry
got your hand in your pocket.
Things.
So if you're still thinking of doing any sort of small ship, can't get that out. That's an alliteration and a half, isn't it?
Watch how you say that.
I know.
One too.
Small ship cruising. Consider Coral Expeditions. It might suit you for your next voyage. I'll try not to do an alliteration next week.
Thank you, Sally.
Thanks, Amanda.
See you next week.
We'll
this is Talking Travel on 2NURFM.